continue to help us as a country. And this is not about me or my party or about the incumbency. It's about a people, ensuring that we prevent electoral violence, ensuring that we build confidence in the electoral system, ensuring that we think outside the box so that when we go to the polls on October 10th, every voter has the confidence that their vote will be protected and that you have support from the international community that will mitigate electoral violence.
If they repose confidence in you, what will be your number three things you will do within the first 3 days of your presidency?
Within the first 3 days of the presidency, I will be working on ensuring that we have a gender balance team, putting together a team, a crack team of all Liberians who want to put their hands to the plow and making sure we have 50% representation of women in our cabinet in the first 3 days, calling for peace and calm while we're working on putting the team together, calling for peace and calm and making sure that all Liberians are prepared to participate in transforming Liberia and restarting Liberia. We will be making sure that we let people know upfront that safety and security of all Liberians is important and the issue of corruption and the cries of the people around corruption will be heard. We will be calling for the institution of a fast-track corruption code within the first 90 days.
Sarah Baslow Nyanti is the presidential candidate of the opposition party, African Liberation League. She spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Zimbabwe, the main opposition party, Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, says its decision not to seek legal redress over the disputed elections is an indictment of the independence of the judiciary. This after the party called on the international community, including the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to pressure the administration for fresh elections, citing a lack of transparency, intimidation and harassment of its supporters during the election process. The opposition party rejected the outcome of the presidential polls, but supporters of the governing ZANU-PF reject the criticism, saying the CCC are sore losers. Promise Nkwanazi, a spokesperson for the main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, tells me that the party will only engage in a dialogue with the government if its arrested members and sympathizers are released.
Our party is calling for fresh elections, and SADC has already said that there was no election in Zimbabwe. What happened in Zimbabwe cannot be considered as a free and fair, let alone a legitimate election.
But do you think this call for fresh elections will be listened to by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and, for that matter, the government after installing the president?
It must be listened to. You know that in 2008, we had a disputed election as well. President Mugabe then was forced by SADC and AU to work with President Morgan Tsvangirai in forming a government of national unity in which they worked together for 5 years. So there is precedent. And indeed, SADC has got the political jurisdiction to adjudicate and make recommendations to the Zimbabwean situation.
If SADC recommends that ZANU-PF should work with CCC, will CCC be available to work in a unity government led by President Emmerson Mnangagwa?
No, it's not obvious that it has to be led by Emmerson Mnangagwa. The election is disputed. We believe that President Nelson Chamisa is the one that won the elections. We are only available to work with Mr. Mnangagwa in a transitional framework, in which we will be underwriting a process or a roadmap towards a free and fair election in the most immediate possible time.
What if the ZANU-PF, the ruling government, decides that it will not abide by recommendations from the SADC community? Then what happens next for CCC?
Well, it will see at that point in time, but we don't expect them not to abide by the SADC recommendations. In any case, even if they don't abide, pressure, both domestic and regional and international, will come to bear on Mr. Mnangagwa, and his government will be illegitimate, and it will be very difficult for Mr. Mnangagwa to govern effectively. So it is in his favor that he must abide and comply so that he becomes an acceptable part of the region as well as of the international community.
Well, Promise, I'm sure you are aware that a group has called for an investigation of the head of the SADC Pole Observer Mission, Dr. Neves Mumba, who is a former Zambian vice president, that he was biased or in favor of Triple C during the election process, which they said undermined the mandate of the SADC Pole Observer Mission to be unbiased or neutral during the election process. Your response to that?
What I can tell you is that Dr. Mumba was just but a chairperson of a group of SADC observers under the auspices of the SADC Election Observer Mission. He was not on his own. The views expressed in the preliminary as well as the final report are not Dr. Mumba's views. They are the collective views of the Election Observer Mission as a collective.
So what has been your message or Triple C's message to your supporters after some people say you raised their level of expectations that you were going to win the election? However, President Emmerson Mnangagwa was declared winner and has subsequently been installed as president of Zimbabwe.
Well, we have no qualms with the fact that we actually won the elections. We know that we won the elections. We've got the evidence. The fact that we didn't present it to court is an indictment on the court, and the judges must be thinking about this. That we've come into a situation where our courts are no longer a station of dispute resolution or an option to be considered under our domestic remedies. We are doing everything that is permissible in a democratic society, in the region and domestically, to ensure that we ratchet up pressure using peaceful and non-violent means to bring Mr. Mnangagwa to the table to discuss the framework for a fresh, free and fair election.
Are you willing to engage in a dialogue without preconditions with President NMC Mnangagwa and, for that matter, the ZANU-PF?
We are willing to engage in a dialogue that is aimed towards creating a framework towards a fresh, free and fair election. We will not enter into any dialogue as long as our members are still in prison. For there to be dialogue as a starting point, all our political activists and leaders who are imprisoned must be freed. And then we can take it from there in terms of discussing a framework to a fresh election in the most immediate time possible.
Promise Nkwananzi is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe's main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change or Triple C. He spoke with me from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare. A Ugandan parliamentarian is seeking a motion to regulate the staffing and provision of vehicles to the office of the president. Ibrahim Semuju says it is too expensive and unsustainable for the office to employ about 996 people, including 82 presidential advisors and 27 presidential assistants. Local media reports the parliamentarian are saying the office of the president has 400 vehicles, 59 waitresses, 14 room attendants, 40 private secretaries, 80 gardeners, 129 drivers, 50 cleaners, 35 cooks, and 12 chefs. But supporters of the governing National Resistance Movement, or NRM, dismiss the accusations as an attempt to embarrass the president and score political points at his expense. For a reaction to the budget for the president's office, I reached parliamentarian Ibrahim Semuju.
I have actually today filed a note to the speaker with the intention of moving a motion to regulate the recruitment and the provision of vehicles to the president, because the concern, we spend annually 410 billion shilling on the presidency, and the presidency has gone outside the Presidential Movements and Benefits Act and started recruiting people without following the law. At the moment, the president of Uganda, at his residence, State House, he employs 996 staff at the expense of medical personnel in hospital. We have 2,000 medical interns who run most of our hospitals. They are not deployed because of money. Yet the president has staff he does not need: gardeners, cooks, room attendants. So the president is being extravagant, yet we have many, many problems, including the suspension of funding by the World Bank. So that's why I want Parliament to move a motion to stop the president from this excessive abuse of the president.
Don't you think with the kind of
government that is being run in Uganda and the population. The president needs these people to advise him on how better to administer and how to manage the affairs of Uganda to be effective as it is at the moment.
The principal institution that is supposed to be advising the president is the cabinet. And we have one of the biggest cabinets in the world. The cabinet of Uganda comprises 86 ministers. Uganda has, our GDP is $45 billion. Turkey, with over $500 billion GDP, has a cabinet of less than 20 ministers. Each of these ministers who are supposed to be the principal advisor of the president has a convoy. On top of that, he has added another 82 advisors. You remember the first time he appointed advisors, Professor Kanyehamba, a retired Supreme Court judge, said actually they had looked for Museven to advise him and they couldn't find him. So these advisors are not being recruited to advise the president, but just an opportunity to give them money.
But some people are saying you are just playing politics with all this.
The presidency did not set up itself. The law on Presidential Emoluments and Benefits Act lists what the president is entitled to. He's entitled to a limousine, a lead police car, is entitled to a security vehicle. It does not give him 66 vehicles like he is having today, including, by the way, recently his son was in eastern Uganda on a campaign trail, also in a presidential convoy. His wife also has a presidential convoy. We are a poor country. If we are rich like Qatar and Kuwait, maybe the president can be afforded that luxury. But we are a country that cannot even pay. Last financial year, we are unable to pay our loan. That's how the international lenders ended up encroaching on our reserves. So these things are issues of life and death. We're only asking the president really to be sympathetic to the country.
But don't you think the first son or the son of the president, who is also an advisor, was a head of a special military unit, and the first lady need to be protected?
You see, the protection must be engraved in the law. It's not a dream. If the law gives you less, you can only give yourself more by having the law changed. I am talking about the law on the Presidential Emoluments and Benefits Act. Yes, we need to protect the president, but the president must not exaggerate the threat. You mean the president must have a convoy, the son, the wife, and we, look, this country has just 550 ambulances. We have a gap of 340 ambulances. You cannot transport Ugandans who are sick to hospital, but you're able to transport illegally your children to campaign rallies.
Ibrahim Semuju is a member of parliament. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Still in Uganda, the opposition party National Unity Platform, or NUP, is calling on citizens to rise to ensure the respect of the rule of law and their fundamental rights. Parliamentarian Francis Zaki says the positive reaction from citizens so far demonstrates that the party's message is being widely accepted. His remarks come as leaders of the NUP, including its presidential candidate Bobi Wine, embark on what it calls a nationwide mobilization tour in preparation for 2026 general election. This as the party outlines its alternative plans to resolve the challenges facing the country. Businessman and parliamentarian Francis Zak is on the party's campaign tour. I reach him via telephone to talk about the party's message and electoral prospect.
We are in the northern part of Uganda, and the reactions that is coming from Ugandans, they are really very, very, very happy that this time we have been able to reach them out without any kind of interruptions. Our reason being that last time when we moved out during campaigns, there was a lot of human rights violations from the state, and this time it has been a bit peaceful and been able to reach out to our people, and they're extremely very, very, very happy, and they're showing us massive support.
What is the significance of this national tour and engaging Ugandans? What is the significance of it, and why embark on it?
this is under our mobilization department in the party, and our very first motive is to make sure that Ugandans wake up, wake them up. We put a lot of energy in them so that they are able to do what they are supposed to be doing, and that is through these kind of mobilizations and these tours, so that they know that it's not about us, the leaders, but it's about them as Ugandans, and we really see that it is working out.
As a member of parliament and a businessman, what message is the NUP giving the people of Uganda that you think will necessitate their support?
First and foremost, the message we are putting out there is that Ugandans should rise up to the occasion to know that this is that it is their right to fight for their country, to fight the different violations that have happened to them. And we are calling upon Ugandans, especially the young people, that they should find it within themselves to mobilize, to organize, to plan for this kind of revolution at this stage. And as a member of parliament, I believe this is the time that we need to all of us to move to our different areas to make sure that Ugandans wake up and rise up to the occasion to make sure that their rights are respected and they get back their power that Museveni took away from them.
When you talk about revolution in Uganda, what do you mean by that? Because some people may misinterpret it as calling for an armed insurrection or destabilize the country or to forcefully depose the government at the moment. So
yeah, for the last 7 years, Mr. Museveni, he has been in government and he has been imposing himself as president without the respect of Ugandans, without Ugandans voting him, and he has been rigging elections. He has been doing whatever he can to push down the economy of the country. The people are in extreme poverty. The people in Uganda are really, really very, very, very poor. So in that trend, only takes Ugandans to wake up to make sure that their rights are respected, to make sure that there is democracy, to make sure that at least the rule of law is in control in Uganda. So that's why we believe that this is the time for Ugandans to put up a very, very strong resistance against the Museveni regime.
NRM supporters are saying you get defeated at the polls, you create chaos, tension in the country by NUP supporters, you go to court, you are unable to prove your case in court, yet you accuse the government of rigging elections. How do you respond to that?
You have just said it right, that the NUP supporters, and these are the majority. So when they rise up to the occasion, they of course perceive it in a different way. So they rigged the elections. Even the people who were observing these elections, they could say so. First and foremost, you saw that Mr. Museveni chased away. Most of the poor went to observe these elections, and the few who remained came up with a very, very strong message. Even the international media and the international, you know, partners came up with a statement showing that all that happened in the elections, it was all, you know, it was all faulty.
Francis Zaake is a member of the Ugandan parliament and a leading member of the opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, this Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Yeah.
was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, do not insult the alligator until you cross the river. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.